Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Health Tribe Forum. And I appreciate all of you taking time to be here this evening, so thank you. And I am Diana Harrington, speaking to you from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And I'm the co-founder of the Health Tribe Forum and the head chef of Real Food for Life. And that's a place that's actually filled with lots of recipes and good nutritional information. And they were both created by me and Randy Fritz to create an awareness of, you know, a simpler and healthier ways of eating and living. And right now I'm just finishing up my most recent book, which is Eating Green, Clean, and Lean, which we will be releasing at the end of this forum. And also to let you know that we are recording this call tonight, as we have been all of them. And tonight I have with me Robert Teek. Hello, Robert, and thank you for taking the time to be here, as I know you are very busy.
Hey, thanks so much, Anne. I really appreciate you having me on.
You know, I've been following you around on Twitter and Facebook, and I know that you're a busy guy. So, you know, I know very little about this whole bodybuilding business. That's not me at all. And when I think of bodybuilders, I think of huge, hulking men, you know, fanatically exercising all day and even night, eating lots of rare steaks and taking massive doses of steroids or whatever they take these days, and, you know, maybe even dying at a young age. And so it sounds a little scary and, you know, maybe not even the kind of person I'd like to invite into my home. So for those of you hearing about Robert Teek for the first time, I want you to know he's not any of that. And Robert has perhaps more than any person in the world proven that a vegan can still be a bodybuilder and be healthy and even a professional athlete, and he does this all by example. And he's also bringing together all the vegan bodybuilders and other athletes into highlighting them in his website, veganbodybuilding.com. So as if encouraging and inspiring others to eat well is not enough, Robert is working with so many good causes, showing compassion for not only animals and your body, but for the environment and the entire world. So, Robert,
yes.
What sent you down this path of becoming the most well-known vegan bodybuilder?
Well, first of all, that's quite an image you've got about bodybuilding. I'm glad that I don't fit that mold that comes to mind when you think of it. But I think it's important you said that, because I think a lot of people do think of bodybuilding that way, and they're a little bit intimidated by bodybuilders and may not have a good feeling about bodybuilders. And, you know, that's one thing that I look to change, to give a really positive image for bodybuilding and fitness and health and wellness and veganism. And to address your question specifically, how did I get where I'm going right now, and maybe why is my name synonymous with vegan bodybuilding? And I think there's a really good reason behind that, and that's because at a very young age, I decided that I really, really wanted to do something. I really wanted to be big and muscular, even though I was the smallest kid in my class growing up. I was a small, skinny, scrawny kid who grew up on a farm, grew up raising animals for food, and I always had these dreams of being like He-Man, like this big, strong person to spread positive messages to other people. And I think what I was able to do was really believe in myself at a young age, in a time when a lot of people don't. We question whether we're good enough, whether we're strong enough, whether we're smart enough, whether we're talented enough, whether our family or our friends or teachers will believe in us. And for whatever reason, I was able to actually do that, wholeheartedly believe in my ability to do something that was meaningful to me. And so I found passion in it. I found meaning in it. Mm-hmm. And I think when we do that, we can propel ourselves to do whatever we want to do, because it doesn't feel like a chore. It doesn't feel like I've got to go work out now, or, oh, I've got to eat this food, or, oh, I've got to make this effort or make this appointment or do this. It comes naturally. We want to do it. There's nothing else we'd rather do. And when we find what that is, regardless of what it is, it can be in any category, from entertainment to music to sports, whatever it is, we can be exceptional at it, because we'll work extremely hard to get there. And so that's what I did. I found what I wanted to do, and I worked, and I worked, and I worked, and I had this idea in my head that I could outwork anybody if I wanted something bad enough. And that's just the philosophy that I've followed in everything that I've done, from academics to sports. And sure enough, when I became vegan as a 15-year-old at 120 pounds, I picked up the weights and I went after it. And years later, I was 195 pounds. I'd gained 75 pounds on a plant-based diet and turned into a bodybuilder and started my website and started bringing people together. And
so it just shows you that being passionate about whatever it is, that you can do it. Like, you knew that as a child, which is pretty amazing that you already, as this scrawny child, knew that you wanted to do that. I think that's pretty amazing. So
I think it's kind of rare, actually. It's just common for us to question ourselves, to doubt ourselves, to go with the norm, to not go against the grain, to not challenge authority or challenge popular opinion, and to not pursue something, because I've been saying this a lot lately, everybody has goals, but nobody's achieving them. And that's important to understand, because it's the people in our life who we trust are the ones that say we're not good enough. You know, it's our parents, it's our teachers, our best friends, our siblings. And we start to believe that over time. And I just decided to take that feedback, like, yeah, right, you're going to be a bodybuilder? Come on. I mean, you're so skinny, you're so scrawny. On top of that, you're vegan. There's just no chance. You should do something else, you know, be a runner, do something that's more fitting. But I used all of that as some sort of fuel, some sort of motivation, something to inspire me, hold myself accountable, and to prove everybody wrong. And that's been a lifelong journey, to make a living out of proving people wrong, and in ways that mean something to me, not just to do it,
that's
but in ways
cool.
that are really important.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, because who could ever think that a scrawny kid could end up being, you know, somebody with all this muscle? And I guess that's kind of what probably delights you in standing up on those stages and showing off your muscles. You kind of have fun doing that, it sounds like.
Oh, sure, absolutely, because, I mean, it's the same thing in academics, let's say. If two people get the same grade, let's say you get an A grade, but one person had to just work exceptionally hard to get it because maybe the content was harder to grasp or it just didn't come naturally to them and they had to put in more work. Then maybe someone else who had someone help them with their homework the whole time, or they took some sort of shortcut. There's just a deeper fulfillment and deeper meaning from dedicating a certain amount of work ethic to something. And for me, yeah, I think I do experience that when I'm in bodybuilding, because it was such a long journey that most people, I think, would have given up and given in because maybe it wasn't worth it or it was too challenging.
Well, it wasn't like natural genetics. It wasn't like you were born one of those great, big, strong bodies that just tweaked it.
And no, in fact, that's like one of the things that I like the most is my before and after photos, which are on the internet, on my website, in my book, all over the place. You can see
that you were just a skinny little guy.
Yeah, where I said it.
A wimp.
Yeah.
And what people would call
a
wimp.
Can take that.
What's that?
I can take that. It's okay to call me a wimp from before. Sure.
So I know you've become, you know, really, you know, well known as this bodybuilder, and you didn't ever realize that you would become this. I mean, you had the idea that you would become this, but did you ever realize that or think that you would become so well known? Like, I mean, you're actually in that whole realm. You're really very, very famous in a way. You're really well known. So did you ever think that that would happen?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know that I ever did. I knew when I became vegan as a kid, I didn't know many other people. Just my older sister, who was my inspiration, and some people at my school. And I heard of a couple people like Howard Wyman, I think I had heard of, and Woody Harrelson. I didn't really know anybody else. And when I started my website, and this is 100% truth, I didn't know a single vegan athlete outside of myself. In fact, it was originally called veganbodybuilder.com with an ER because I only knew of me. And I set out to start writing blogs before blog was even a word. And I just started to write a website about what I was doing, lifting weights and competing on a plant-based diet. And sure enough, yeah, years went by and we changed the name to veganbodybuilding.com. We started featuring other people. And now we have more than 4,000 vegan athletes. And it's been incredible to watch that grow. And, you know, it's funny you mention that. I don't think about it that much. But I was at a movie premiere yesterday for a movie called Bold Native, and yeah, some people came up to me with that kind of thing, like, oh, I want to meet you. You're famous, and it is new for me, and it's different, and it's something that I think is just a result of caring more than anybody else is willing to on a certain subject, and just working incredibly hard, and success follows, and inspiration is a result. Other people get motivated, lives get changed, lives get saved, and that's why we do it in the first place. So,
and that sounds very much like anybody could do that with anything. Anything.
I honestly think you can. In fact, I write about it. I honestly believe it's a mathematical formula. If you follow these specific things in sequential order, you know, finding what you're passionate about and creating a vision and being consistent and allowing adaptation to occur, which leads to improvement, which success follows, and shared success is a byproduct of, if you do all these things with all the little details, like the action plan and the support network and all these just components that I created in just my own experience, I think, I honestly believe that's where you'll end up.
Uh-huh. I do too, and most of us just don't do everything it takes to get there. I think that's the only thing, that's the main difference from what I hear you saying.
I completely agree. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So, you know, the other thing is, like, you know, you being someone so well known, and you know, it actually puts you in a position of having a voice to do good, do something good. And I know that you've done that. And would you like to talk about how you've used that to do this extra good in the world?
Absolutely. And thank you for that question. I believe that it's kind of my responsibility to lead by example because of the position I put myself in, the titles that I gave myself 10 years ago that were true at the time and still remain true, the work that I've done in media to pave the way for this a little bit to some degree. I do feel very responsible and very accountable for everything that I'm doing, and I know that I'm being watched and people are seeing me as a role model, and my actions need to reflect that and support that. And at the end of the day, I feel pretty good about that because I think there's no better way to encourage any new idea, like leading by positive example. There's just nothing like that.
Mm-hmm. Because, is there any specific things that you feel like you have really made a difference in the world in some way with anything in particular?
Sure. I think my story in general of belief in self, I mean, obviously it's a vegan story. It's reducing animal suffering and cruelty and eating a plant-based whole food diet and promoting veganism and animal rights. But it's more of just a story of one person believing in themselves to do what they want to do and having an incredible time doing it while making a difference the entire time and finding meaning in what they're doing and knowing what the outcome is going to be. And so yeah, when I use my before and after photos or tell my story like I'm doing now and as I write about it and share it in books and articles and magazine interviews, I think that inspires a lot of people. I don't care what their interest is. It doesn't matter to me because it's so uniquely important to each individual.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is to get you or to get anybody to say, you know what, I can do it. Mm-hmm. I can believe in myself. So I don't have to say, like Mark Twain said, 20 years from now, you'll be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than by the ones you did do. And I encourage people to take action and make it happen today. Whatever it is that you're passionate about, whatever it is that moves you, that drives you, that just makes you smile so much and gives you so much fulfillment, you owe it to yourself to do that right now. Because every day that we delay taking action on something that's meaningful to us, we delay that outcome. We delay that achievement. We delay that success. And we always have to ask ourselves, what might have been? And I think that's the message that I leave with people, regardless of what their interest is. And I love seeing that, and I hear the feedback. People are believing in themselves. They are going vegan. They are starting a group or organization. They are becoming athletes. They are losing weight, gaining energy. They're starting their own websites. They're writing their own books. And that does leave an impact on
the
community.
Right, so it's not just about you running around trying to get everybody to be bodybuilders.
Absolutely not.
It's more just like what you just said, like really inspiring people to do what they would love to be doing, what they're passionate about, because we all have something to offer. And if we do what we're really best at and have the most to offer, I mean, gosh, you know, isn't that a good idea?
Yeah. What I ask people to do is simply this. Sit down right now and write down 5 things that you like, 5 things that you love, and 5 things that you're passionate about. And just look at that list and start piecing things together and realize, whoa, you know, I'm doing a lot of things that I like, but what if I start doing the things that I love and that I'm passionate about? Mm-hmm. What kind of life would that be, and what kind of impact could I have? Because mm-hmm. I'm going to care so much about it. I'll work 18 hours a day, and it won't feel like that. It will absolutely feel like I'm playing all day long, doing exactly what I want to do. I'll be smiling the whole time, laughing. I'll be loving it. And I think that's what it's about. And to actually do those things, don't just say it, but mm-hmm. to write down those things and look at it on paper. Because how many times have we said it, you and I, or anybody listening, you know, I love doing this, but you mm-hmm. do it once a year. Mm-hmm. That's not something you love. What you love is what you put everything on hold for, and you make that a priority. And what you're passionate about is even deeper than that. And so it's mm-hmm. really answering those questions, and mm-hmm. then you can be absolutely remarkable at whatever it is you want, and you'll just enjoy 7 out of 7 days instead of just the weekends. And that's an important fraction. Yeah. 7/7 is way better than 2/7.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And, you know, so it sounds to me like you do really enjoy your life. And so this image I have of bodybuilders, doesn't even matter what kind of food they eat, but that they just are, you know, working out all day and all night practically to really build those muscles. So how many hours in a day do you work out on average, or?
Well, that's a good question, and good we're moving on to fitness stuff, too. But I like to always throw out the motivation and inspirational stuff at the beginning because, you know, why does fitness matter in the first place? I mean, that's the thing. You've got to find where your meaning is in it. But as far as that, the way I want to address that is if more were better, we would train 10 hours a day or 12 hours a day. If more were better, we would be in the gym all day, every day. But the reality is most of us, me and the best in the world even, only train, you know, 1 to 2 hours a day, 6 days a week, because it's the intensity of the workout and then the recovery process that makes all the difference. So when we're in the gym, we're creating micro tears in our muscles, and we need rest, which is sleep, time away from training, food, amino acids, et cetera, for recovery. And that's where it happens. So even when I'm at my biggest, my best, my strongest, when I'm competing, I'm training, you know, 1.5 hours a day, really? 6 days a week. But when I'm in the gym, I'm not messing around. I'm in there to get
down
to
business.
But
you're really doing it those hours. I mean, you're not just, you know, not just kind of quietly lifting a weight once every few minutes.
Oh, no, it's intense, and I train for about 1 hour, 1.5 hours, and I push it as hard as I can within safety measures, you know. I really believe in applied effort and pushing ourselves and demanding more from ourselves, and I think that carries over to other aspects of life too, be it our work, our relationships, our business. If we can put a really solid effort in and a commitment and consistency into our training, it does amazing things for the rest of our life, but it also does amazing things for our fitness. And that's the thing. That's something that not a lot of people know. They do think we're in the gym every morning and night. And there are periods where you may see someone doing that, myself included, and that's usually only just weeks before competition where we deliberately try to significantly reduce our body fat, sweat out lots of water. So during those kind times, I may go to the gym 3 times a day for 45 minutes each time, something like that. But for the most part, it's 1 hour to 90 minutes a day.
Well, that's very enlightening to me, because what I've just heard you say is, okay, one thing is that because of the intensity, that also keeps it down, like, you know, that's where you can do it in a lesser time.
Oh, sure, you can even do it in 45 minutes or 40 minutes, because intensity is a big part of it, for sure.
Well, that's really interesting. I had no idea. So that means that your girlfriend actually does get to see you. You're not in the gym all the time.
Yes, it does. It does lead for some sort of social time and balanced life, and that's just a byproduct of prioritizing time management and understanding the role that efficiency plays inside the gym. Because as we know, there's a big difference between going to the gym and watching the television while riding a stationary bike and laughing along or listening to music and throwing heavy weights around with purpose and meaning, and they obviously result in different outcomes too. And And a lot of people may give up on fitness, just like they may give up on other things because the approach wasn't right. And when the approach is not right, we do fail, or we have to make some adjustments in order to get it right.
Right, right. Okay, well, that's great because, you know, for someone like me, you know, just starting out in getting, I'll just say briefly, like I had fibromyalgia for a good 15 to 17 years, and I'm totally better now. But I've had a hard time really getting back into a really good, strong, fit state. And so I'm just starting out, and I know there's other people that are listening too that'll kind of go, well, you have to be a bit careful because over-exercising just doesn't really work that well. So, you know, I'm a little hesitant to start lifting weights because I'm a little scared of, you know, maybe stressing my body. And, you know, so what would you say to someone like me? Like, where would I start?
Sure. It's a good question. It's a valid question. What I would say is there are some amazing benefits to weightlifting and resistance training. And it doesn't have to be the way that I described of throwing heavy weights around, bench pressing 300 pounds, and you know, grunting, squatting, you know, all these things all along the way. It doesn't have to be that way. But the idea is to be doing something that stresses our muscles, that puts some pressure on our bones, keeps them strong, keeps our muscles active. It actually does a wonderful thing to help prevent injury because we have a stronger body and better muscle tone. It does a number of great things for weight management and muscle mass retention. It does great things for our heart, our lungs, our circulation. There's so many benefits. But what I would say is it's like anything else, you want to ease into it. So maybe you have been taking time off because of, let's say, lack of interest or recovering from an injury or something like that. Those are typically some of the reasons we take a lot of time off, or we're too busy, it doesn't fit in our schedule, or whatever it is. Whatever the case is, it's always good to ease back into it. You don't have to start with 6 days a week, but starting with 2 or 3 days a week of doing something and using light weights and proper form, learning from somebody who is a fitness professional, a personal trainer, an experienced weightlifter at the gym. These are all great tools to draw upon and use. And it's the idea is to just start doing something, because all the times that we say, well, I'm afraid to get it started, or I'm afraid to get into it, or I'm not sure how my body's going to respond, these are all things that just push everything back and make delays. And you know, to some degree, are forms of excuses of why we're intimidated to do something maybe, which, again, I think can parallel other areas of life too. So I say jump into it, but jump into it cautiously with and ease into it approach, you know, 2 or 3 days a week, and train within a reason, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, weights that are manageable, get used to it, allow your body to adapt and get stronger, and then it becomes second nature, it becomes a lot of fun, and you start feeling these additional byproducts of increased energy and better muscle tone and maybe more flexibility, and it's good.
I think you know, just looking, I don't want to talk about myself too much, but just looking at where someone like that comes with, that had fibromyalgia, that you go and you do something and you end up, when you're sick, it takes you like, you know, anywhere from 3 to 6 months to recover from some little outing that you did. I'm not there anymore, but, you know, having not done anything for about 20 years, it is kind of scary to get going.
Oh, sure.
I think you have to be very, very careful. And I think I feel like I'm ready. I've been doing a lot of walking, you know, as you know, a real therapy in itself. And I thought, well, that's a good place to start. It's before anything else. It's easier. And then I thought, well, okay, how do I go to the next step? So do you think that maybe even 30 minutes, two or three times a week might be even a little bit much at this stage, or would it be?
No, I don't think so, because you dictate the pace and you dictate the intensity level. So I totally understand the approach of coming back very cautiously after quite a long break. And if walking is what you're doing now, what about maybe walking up a hill, or walking a little bit longer, or maybe at a faster pace?
Mm-hmm.
These are the types of increments that I'm a fan of starting with. I wouldn't just jump right in to a very heavy weight training program if I hadn't trained weights in a while, if I was recovering from an injury or something like that. But it's definitely going up in increments that are comfortable.
Right.
And maybe swimming's a part of it. Maybe cycling's a part of it. Maybe
walking
some sort
up
of
hills is maybe a thing. Randy and I have been going for walks quite frequently, and he took me on one of his walks. It's just a no-brainer for him, but it required going up a very, very steep hill and a big one. And I went,
oh,
we have to walk up that. And we did, but I actually had to rest on the way up about two or three times.
Yeah.
But what to do, you know, I thought, well, if I really push it and I'm just like, you know, hardly able to breathe by the time I get up, so that doesn't feel like that makes sense.
Well, I think it's finding one that's less steep or less, the distance is less. It's not jumping up too high of an increment, and that's important too, I think. So
maybe I should be going up smaller hills to start with.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
Get to those bigger hills later. I hope Randy's hearing this.
Adaptation is a wonderful thing. I can't run a marathon tomorrow, no way. But if I train every day for the next 6 or 9 months, you bet. I mean, maybe right now I can only run down the street about a mile because I don't run a lot these days. I lift weights. My cardiovascular condition isn't there. So I'm not going to jump into a five-mile run right now. I wouldn't make it. I'd have to stop two or three times or maybe 13 times. So I wouldn't do that. But what I would do is I would start jogging, and then I would start jogging more and more and more. And eventually, yeah, those five-mile runs, 10-mile runs,
right,
half marathon, it becomes easy, it becomes natural because of that wonderful thing called adaptation, and I'm a big fan of that. That's how we give ourselves a fighting chance at anything, whether it's learning a language, to learning a sport, or learning a musical instrument. It's the immersion of consistency, and it works phenomenally well in fitness too. That when you immerse yourself into something, you're consistent, you adapt naturally, you get stronger, you get faster, endurance goes up. And even your own mental state, your positive attitude and confidence grows. These are all wonderful byproducts of that. So that's what I would suggest.
And a word that I'm hearing you say is consistent.
Yeah,
and
my favorite word in the world.
Yeah, and that's the word that I use because I work with a lot of people with their diets and things and doing stuff. So I use that word with them. So I get that word.
It's
an important
major
one.
Focus. In every book that I've written, there's sometimes chapters dedicated to it. I think it's in my recent book, I said it's the most important word in the world, and I really think it is.
I agree with you. It's really important. I use it so much, and I just got it just now about this. That was a good enlightening moment for me because I see that's the thing. I have moments. I go through a whole period where I'll do so much walking, but then I'll slack off for a while. But I have a pedometer now, and I wear it nonstop, except when I go to bed at night. And I'm always watching it and seeing what I've done, and I go, oh my gosh, you know, I didn't do that many today. I don't beat myself up, but, you know, it helps to see. It gives me awareness. So,
yeah, it makes us more accountable.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we want to stay consistent. I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah,
of course. And when we don't, we feel like maybe we, you know, we didn't give ourselves the best chance.
Yeah.
And we feel a bit shorted maybe if we weren't as consistent as we needed to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a wonderful way for us to adapt and achieve is to be aware of that and to apply it immediately in whatever we're doing.
Well, that's great. And so, you know, I'm the sort of person who often overdoes it in most things that I do in life. I just go for it. You know, I'm always going for it. With everything, and I'm...
Yeah, I like that attitude.
What's that?
I like that attitude.
So what I am a little worried about is how you know, what if I start over-exercising? How can you tell when you've just done too much, like when you're trying to move too much weight or whatever? How would you know this? Like, what would be the tell signs?
Yeah, tell signs
you get
over,
there?
Over-training, sure. Well, there are going to be a few. One is going to be out of the ordinary fatigue and exhaustion, something that just doesn't feel right. You just have to take extra naps, or you're getting tired during the exercise. Something that just feels different that's totally out of the ordinary. And that's one sign that maybe we're pushing a little bit too much. Another one is if we feel, this is especially related to weight training, if we feel some sort of soreness that doesn't feel like the regular burn that we get from lifting weights. It's the regular just burning sensation, the soreness that comes, but it feels more like maybe an injury soreness. Like maybe, ooh, did I just pull something? Or I think I just pinched a nerve in my back. That's something I've done many times. I know how those things feel. They don't feel right. Those are times that, okay, maybe we haven't given our biceps enough time to rest and we shouldn't train them right now because they're clearly still sore from the last workout. They haven't fully recovered and they're susceptible to being injured if I continue to do so. So those are a couple signs to definitely look for. And it's also important during all of these times to be eating adequate nutrition too. I mean, that's how we recover. We take in amino acids, we take in protein, carbohydrates, and fats. We refuel, which we need. We need to replenish the glycogen stores. We need to replenish sugars. We need to replenish the fats and obviously complete protein to repair muscle tissue as well. So that's another thing. If we look at our nutrition program, and speaking of consistency, I encourage people to write down what they're eating because that's an easy way to track, measure, calculate, and evaluate what we're doing and what we're not doing and why we're successful or why we're not successful. So then we can see, okay, I'm not eating enough. That's why I'm tired and I haven't had enough protein content maybe or amino acids, and that's why I'm feeling some of the soreness that I'm feeling. I haven't been taking in essential fats, therefore I feel some joint problems. These types of things, these are all things to look for.
So, here's the other thing is that what we had, the other fallacy of this whole bodybuilder is the guy who's sitting there eating his rare steak, and we know that you're not doing that, so you have chosen to be vegan.
Yeah.
And what kind of led you into that in the first place, and then we'll get into a bit more about the proteins I'm interested in, but what led you, what got you really going into this whole vegan thing?
Sure, good question. My older sister, Tanya, organized an animal rights week at my high school back in December of 1995. And like I said earlier, I grew up on a farm, and I was skinny, scrawny kid, eating meat, drinking milk because it does the body good. You know, the commercials, I was really driven to gain more muscle based on the advertising that I saw. And I consumed those foods. And my sister brought in speakers, played videos of factory farming and animal testing, and passed out literature, and I decided it was an industry that I didn't want to contribute to anymore. I didn't want to support animal suffering and cruelty to any extent, not just meat, but dairy, eggs, leather, fur, everything else, and I became vegan right away as a teenager. And later on, I started organizing animal rights weeks at my high school and post-high school and have been doing my own forms of activism the last 15 years. And so for me, that's how it all started. And I had a lot of these fears too. You know, what do I eat? I do want to be this muscle guy. What do I eat? Don't I need protein? Don't I need all these different things that I've been told that I need? And basically, at the end of the day, we need vitamins, minerals, amino acids, fatty acids, glucose. You know this. A lot of the listeners know this. And we just need to apply that. You mentioned steak. Why would I eat steak? It's a secondary source of nutrition. Right? I mean, primary sources of nutrition are fruits, vegetables, nuts, grains, seeds. That's where these things come from, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, protein, carbs, fats, et cetera. They come in their original forms from plant-based whole foods. Why have some sort of secondary source that may have issues with cholesterol, contamination, additional costs, saturated fat, possibly, all these other things? Why do that?
Exactly.
Why don't we go back to the basics? And I write about this. I talk about this. Food comes from trees, bushes, fields, like crops, and the ground, like gardens. I mean, that's where food comes from, and that's what we should eat. And if we're eating anything else, we're getting some sort of secondary form of nutrition that has a lot of baggage with it that maybe we don't want, and for good reasons.
So tell me, what does your daily diet look like? How would you start the day for a start? Like, what would you have first thing in the day?
I start the day with fruit. I think fruit is a phenomenal thing because it's so energizing, packed full of vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and it's naturally energizing and digests quickly and gives us an abundance of energy, and it tastes great. I think it's the most natural thing for us to be attracted to It's bright colors, it smells, it's amazing flavors. That's something to start the day with mm-hmm. for me. Mm-hmm. Throughout the day, all kinds of different things.
Do you have like a number of pieces of fruit first thing in the morning? Do you do anything special with them?
No, I'm sitting here right now looking at bananas, grapefruits, avocado. I have oranges, apples, cherries, strawberries, things like that. I mean, these are things that I just pile up on. Yeah, sure. Sometimes I have vegan pancakes and potatoes and all these other different things, protein drinks, energy bars, vegan cereals with rice milk, something like that. These are all things that I do incorporate throughout the year, but what I most commonly do,
you start
what I most commonly do is fruit, yeah.
And then you go on to some, I mean, it seems to me the most natural thing in the whole world for the body is that it just wants to eat fruit first thing in the morning. I've always thought that. Ever since I was a teenager, that's what I've thought.
And I know people are still wondering, okay, well, yeah, but fruit's not going to build a lot of muscle. Where are you getting protein, calories, things like that? Well, I eat a ton of quinoa, different other grains, brown rice, lots of different beans, you know, pinto beans, black beans, kidney beans, garbanzo beans, you name it, legumes, lentils, things like that, these heavy foods, packed full of protein, heavy by weight, yams, potatoes, kale, broccoli, spinach, a lot of these foods that have 50% of their calories coming from proteins or high protein sources, you know, all kinds of other things. I've in the past consumed lots of tempeh, tofu, etc. Right now I'm doing a gluten-free and soy-free vegan diet for the last 3 months, so I'm not doing the soy and tempeh and seitan and the typical high protein foods, so I'm doing a lot of different stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm doing, you know, hemp seeds and rice protein and beans and lentils and brown rice and quinoa and all those different greens that I mentioned and other grains and other legumes and nuts and seeds packed full of calories, as we all know. We all associate peanuts, almonds, cashews with heavy fat, heavy calories, and heavy protein, and they do. So all of those, avocado, heavy in calories, I'm doing a couple of those a day. So, and to answer this question even more fully, it's all on my website. I have meal programs, so what I'm eating at 7 a.m., at 10 a.m., at 1 p.m., at 4 p.m., at 7 p.m., it's all listed, including the quantities, the calories, the protein, and it's listed in my book. And I even have on my website, I update it daily, what I eat every day.
I didn't see that part. Okay.
It's kind of hidden. It's on our interactive forum, and I have my own little training journal, and then I have a food journal, and I just update it every day. It is a little harder to find, but it's...
Okay, because I did root around in a lot of things. I didn't happen to see that, but... Okay, it's on the interactive forum part. Okay.
Yeah, it's on the forum. Like when you go to veganbodybuilding.com, you click on forum, and then you click on online training journals, and it's right there under my name, Robert. It's my Take Action, Make It Happen food journal, it's called. I can send you a link later. But
Okay. That's good. Yeah, no, so you have a very wide variety of foods that you're eating, it sounds like to me. It's not like you've homed in on a few things and you're eating those all day long. You're eating quite a wide variety.
Burritos, sandwiches, wraps, you know, bowls of grains and greens and beans and you name it. I mean, from vegan pizzas to junk foods. But I really do prefer, especially lately, to focus more on the best foods in the best categories, you know, the best antioxidant foods, the best protein foods, best carbohydrate foods, and I eat very much a whole food diet right now. Not quite as much, you know, pizza or vegan ice creams or anything like that anymore, though those were a big part of my diet for the last 15 years.
Uh-huh. So do you have any, I mean, I've been a vegan, mostly a vegan. I'm not always 100% vegan, but I've been mostly a vegan most of my adult life. Occasionally I'll come off and I'll do a few other things, but I really feel like it's a healthy way to go. But do you feel like it really helps with bodybuilding, that it's actually healthier to be a vegan bodybuilder than another kind of, you know, one that's not a vegan one?
No question about it. In fact, I don't even think you can argue it, because there is so much animal product consumption in bodybuilding. I mean, it's notorious for that, more than any other sport, more than mm-hmm. a football, more than anything. Mm-hmm. People eating 6 chicken breasts a day, you know, these 300-pound steroid bodybuilders, like you mentioned. They exist. They're friends of mine, and they may eat meat 8 times a day. And the problem is, and this is just real, it's factual, you can look it up on the internet, the problem, and I know these people, the problem is a lot of them are having quadruple bypass open heart surgery in their 30s or 40s, and they're having a lot of problems. Arteries are getting clogged. That's just, and it's not because of the drugs they're taking. I'm sure that doesn't help, but it's basic science.
Wow.
That we're getting all these artery clogging materials into our body. Blood can't flow where it needs to, and then we have heart attack, stroke, open heart surgery, all these different things. And so there's really no, I don't think there's any argument there that there's, and we're eating the primary sources of nutrition, like I mentioned earlier, that you can't necessarily beat that. And so, of course, it's going to be healthier. And I talk to these big bodybuilders all the time who say, you know what, I'm going vegan, or as soon as my career is done, I'm going vegan because I know what's going to happen to my heart if I don't. Mm-hmm. Or they say, you know, I'm doing a high vegan diet or vegetarian diet right now, and these are still massive guys. And here's what I tell anybody. I want to make sure I can throw this in there, is that I don't care who you are, NFL football lineman, 350 pounds, and you want to switch to a vegan diet. Anybody can do it. What you have to do is remember this. For whatever reason, when people decide to change their diet significantly, let's say becoming vegan, they start cutting a lot of things out, and they don't always replace those calories with something else. And then they start losing weight, or they lose energy. And again, it comes down to mathematical equation or formula. If you're eating 4,000 calories a day as a big football player, and you decide you want to be vegan, and all of a sudden you just go down to 2,000 calories, of course you're not going to be able to maintain muscle. Of course you're going to feel more fatigued and tired and weaker, and you're going to be skinnier. It's basic math of caloric intake. And another thing that seems to happen is that when we change our diet significantly, we decide that we're also going to stop exercising because we don't know what's going to happen, right? We're changing our diet. Who knows what's going to happen? I'm going to stop exercising. So not only do we typically reduce our caloric intake dramatically without even realizing it and wonder why we're weaker or scrawny or have less energy, we're also not exercising, which further perpetuates that idea and that reality that, yeah, I'm not building muscle anymore or maintaining muscle or using my body, strengthening my bones, lungs, heart, et cetera, and I feel weak and tired. So what I tell people is, I don't care who you are, anybody can be successful on a vegan diet. What you have to do is figure out what your macronutrient consumption is right now, what your carbohydrate, fat, and protein consumption is by grams or percentages of calories, and make sure when you change over to a plant-based diet that you still get those same ratios. And if you do, you will have the same success that you've always had. And I really believe that.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, if you're going to delete something, you need to add something, you know, and there's just so many wonderful foods out there that a lot of people that are just eating a very standard, fair diet, they just don't know about them. Like a lot of people don't know what quinoa is, you know, or all kinds of things. They've never thought of eating sunflower seeds without them being in the shell and, you know, stuff like that. So it's a matter of adding things too, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's the biggest part, I think. The biggest, easiest way to transition is to add more good things in. Rather than just saying, I'm just going to throw all this stuff out, start adding more good things in. Naturally, junk food goes out. Of course, I encourage people to eliminate animal products immediately, but I'm saying as far as the other things, the breads and some of the other refined foods, just start adding in more whole foods, and the junk foods naturally go away. You naturally have more energy. You naturally feel better, perform better, and you're healthier for it.
Yeah, so I totally agree with you there. So now the thing is that with building muscle, the whole understanding that I've always had and I hear people always talking about is that you need to have a lot of protein in order to build muscle. And I'm just wondering, is that really true?
It's a good question, and I think it's partially true. And a lot of people are surprised because they say, okay, you're a vegan bodybuilder, and I've always heard we all need lots of protein, and you're going to tell us that we don't. And I'm not, actually. A lot of people think I'm going to say that, oh, no, we don't need a lot of protein. If we're active, especially in strength sports, boxing, football, bodybuilding, wrestling, these types of things, mm-hmm. where we're just damaging our muscles. We're putting so much stress on muscles in weightlifting or in our sports activities. We absolutely need a lot of protein. I really believe that. Mm-hmm. If we're sitting around watching television or in an office, we're not very physically active, there's no need for a lot of protein. Mm-hmm. For anybody, vegan or not, you don't need, nobody, the typical inactive or moderately active person does not need a lot of protein. Maybe, oh, I don't know, 0.7, 0.5 to 0.8 grams per pound of body weight or something. I mean, very, very little. We don't need very much. It doesn't need to be a high percentage of our caloric intake. But as soon as we switch over to something incredibly strenuous, like bodybuilding, mm-hmm. it's absolutely essential. Then and what happens if we don't? We can get injured, plain and simple. We need amino acids, which are the building blocks of protein, need complete protein to repair damaged muscle tissue that's as a result of lifting weights. And if we don't get that, not only do we not gain muscle or grow muscle, we don't repair our muscle, we set ourselves up to be injured, and we're never going to make the progress that we're mm-hmm. looking for if we're not getting adequate protein. So right. that's as simple as it gets. And a runner or a cyclist isn't going to need as much either. Mm-hmm. Carbohydrates is their fuel source. That's anybody's biggest energy source. But those athletes are doing long distance endurance, maybe hours at a time training. Mm-hmm. They really need to replenish carbohydrates and replenish fuel and energy used. Mm-hmm. And we're damaging muscles in a much different way, throwing heavy weights around. And in contact sports, we definitely need our share of protein, you know, a gram of protein per pound of body weight or more. And I write about that in my book, and I explain why. And that's okay. The only reason, I'm confident, that's the only reason I was able to gain the significant amount of muscle that I did. I wouldn't be a vegan bodybuilder if I didn't focus on my protein consumption. I would just be a vegan athlete, maybe a vegan right. runner or right. cyclist. But I okay. followed what traditional bodybuilding methods were, which was a high-protein diet, but I just did it on a plant-based diet.
So, I mean, what I'm really hearing you say here is that, you know, basically if we're very active physically, like doing all these different things like bodybuilding or exercising out in the gym a lot, whatever it is, then we do need more protein. But those mostly were people who are just sitting around. They really don't need much. And in our society, most people are getting too much protein as a, don't you think?
Exactly. A standard North American diet is one that is inactive, and the caloric intake is so high that naturally protein being a pretty big chunk of those calories makes it a pretty high protein diet that we're not doing anything with. We're not yeah. using it to repair muscles. We're not using it as a third source of fuel behind carbohydrates as our primary and fats as our secondary. It's not going anywhere except for being stored as fat or excess weight, excess calories, mm-hmm. or being eliminated. Mm-hmm. But you're right. You're right. If we are active, protein is a factor for 75% of us. It's a non-issue. Vegans yeah. or... Yeah. Or, in fact, vegans, it's more of a non-issue. If you are probably not vegan and are inactive, but your caloric intake is very, very high from junk foods and high meat foods, then it is a factor of something that needs to be changed, eradicated, and altered to have probably a lower protein intake and more plant-based whole food approach for better health.
Yeah. Do you think that, I mean, is the sort of the structure of plant protein, is it quite different than animal protein?
I don't think so. I mean, we all proteins are slightly different. They have different bioavailabilities and different absorption rates and different protein digestibility corrected amino acid scores, which can rate the quality of protein. They're all slightly different, but that's okay. That's okay. The idea is that we need all essential amino acids, the 8 essential amino acids, and 4 of them are actually really good for muscle recovery, the branched-chain amino acids, those 3, and then L-glutamine, which glutamine is incredible for muscle recovery, also great for immune system and support and other things too. But anyway, we need the diversity of amino acids, right? I mean, people say, well, I need to eat meat. Well, what do you eat giraffe? I mean, you crave giraffe or all these different things? No, we kind of crave what we've had before. We crave flavors, taste, satiating feelings that we've experienced through food. And somehow in our head, because we typically grew up eating a lot of animal food, that's what we think we need for protein. Mm-hmm. Really,
no,
again, I go back to the primary sources. You get those amino acids from their original forms, from
right.
plant-based whole foods, and you're better off.
Right. So, yeah, I totally agree with you. I understand all that. And what I support, too. So with proteins, like there's a lot of isolated proteins out there. Now, where are you at with that in terms of how do you think that the body can actually handle the isolates?
I'm not really anywhere on that. And I don't really have an opinion on that. I think, except for what I would say is whole food sources are always better than isolated sources. I know different supplements are going to have isolates. Some are going to have whole food, just ground up hemp seeds maybe, so the whole food
right.
form of protein is in there. Other ones, we'll say right on the container, isolated,
mm-hmm.
whatever, rice protein isolate, or whatever the case is. I guess my only stance is that whole food sources are better. And I don't know enough about isolated proteins to know about their bioavailability, their absorption, their quality. I just know that I understand that what I do know is that if it's applied,
mm-hmm.
if the principles are applied consistently mm-hmm. with accountability, some of the really specifics don't matter that much.
Right.
Sometimes we can get so caught up in, okay, is an isolated protein better, or like is pea protein better than rice protein, or how much should I consume of each one? But the idea is if you just get the number of grams of protein that you need every day from a variety of sources, from whole foods, you're going to be doing pretty, pretty well. And the only time
the key
really,
is whole foods, isn't it there?
Right, right. And the only time to really mess around with extreme details, I think, is within a specific context, like maybe
right.
competitive bodybuilding right before getting up on stage and the exact number of grams of protein or carbohydrate consumption, because that does alter the way our body looks in regards to retention of water, skin tightness, muscle definition, tone, leanness. But other than that, I don't think it's that big of a factor.
Right.
Just eat diversity, eat variety. There's no need to get caught up on too many specifics.
Right.
If our goal is just health and recovery from exercise.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good. Okay. I'm going to go into a couple of questions because I think some people have sent in questions. I think good if we can get a few of them in here. We're trying to get a few in with each person. Now, here's one. Hannah says, how to lose those pounds and keep them off?
Good question, Hannah. That's something I love to address. I address it in almost every talk that I give when I'm traveling around the country. I address it in my book. And first of all, it's finding, and it may sound redundant or even silly, but I think it's meaningful, is to find meaning in what you're doing, to care about why do it in the first place? Why lose pounds in the first place? Is it to have more energy? Is it to look a certain way? What matters to you? And then you create a formula to make that happen through consistency, through applied effort, accountability, and if it means enough to you, you'll stick with it. Because, I mean, we all say, you know, I'm trying to lose the final 5 or 10 pounds, I'm trying to gain this final 5 or 10 pounds, or I'm trying to stick with this vegan diet, and, you know, it's just not working. But if it's not working, I think there's a lack of discipline, dedication, and focus there. And so I think that's the overall answer. And the more specific answer is, okay, determine your caloric needs per day based on your age, gender, weight, activity level. Decide how many calories you need to maintain weight, how many calories you need to burn fat and lose weight, and make sure you're consistent with that approach. Eat good foods. Don't have breaks in consistency. Be accountable. Write down what you're eating. Allow yourself to evaluate it and calculate it later on. Make changes, and that's how you stick with it. But the overall answer is just to know why you're doing it and make it a big priority, and you'll definitely be able to achieve it.
Okay, well, that's a good answer. So here's another one from Ray. Now, this one I don't think that you almost don't even need to answer it, but because in a way I think you have answered it as being who you are. But it's, what's the best way to build muscle and not be a beanpole? Because you actually were a beanpole, and you're not.
Ray, the answer is to eat like crazy. And I know it sounds silly, even sounds selfish in a way, but it's to realize what needs to be done nutritionally in order to do that. It's eat like crazy, train like crazy, and recover like crazy from the workout, and you will adapt. That's just a natural way that it works. And you know what? The best shape I've been in my life was when I didn't miss a workout for 6 months. I just decided, you know what? I'm just not going to have any breaks in accountability or consistency. I'm going to train at 1 o'clock in the morning at a Holiday Inn Express and, Mideast or wherever I was in the U.S. Doesn't matter. I'm going to make sure that I stick with this because it means something to me. And you get enough food, enough weight training sessions, you care about it enough, and the bean pole look goes away, and muscles appear, and you get so happy about it, you just keep working towards that. And you set new visions, higher goals, and you continue to achieve from there. But the idea is you just work and work and work and outwork anybody.
Wow, that's a good one. And then it is like the consistency again. Yes. Okay, so here's one more. This one is being a vegan and intolerant to wheat products. What foods are superior in increasing the life force?
Awesome question, because I've been away from gluten for 3 months now, so I actually have a little bit of experience when before I wouldn't have had that. So to answer the question, I caught the name on this one. I was supposed to say their name, but I didn't catch it this time. So,
I forgot. Yeah, it was Jill.
It's okay. The focus is to again, eat fruits, vegetables, greens. You talk about life force. You talk about energy. I think fruits are the best thing out there. You talk about green foods, the darker ones, the better, the dino kale, the kale, spinach, broccoli, these types of foods, alkaline-forming foods. There are some acid-forming foods that are vegan foods, soy being one of them, I believe, and a number of others. But it's focusing on the alkaline-forming fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds, and you can still get totally adequate nutrition without gluten. I've been doing it. I've been training like crazy in the gym lately. It's been a lot of fun and experiencing gains and results. It's something that took some adaptation for sure, because I was always eating breads and sandwiches and wraps and crackers and just getting as many calories as I could. And now, you know what I'm eating? Like I mentioned earlier, my avocados here and my quinoa, my brown rice and bananas and hemp seeds and all these different things. And that's what you do. Eat the high-energy foods, those fruits and greens, and that's a great way to go.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So let's see. Just a couple of things. One last thing before we get on to talking about your book. Is there any just last-minute tips, because we're getting near the end of our interview, is there any last-minute tips that you'd like to share right before we finish up?
It's basically a summary of what I've kind of been saying throughout the evening, is that find what you're passionate about, believe in it wholeheartedly, and resolve to make it happen today. Don't delay what you care about. Do something meaningful right now. I mean, tonight, write it down, what you like, what you love, what you're passionate about, and resolve to do something with it. And that's all I'd like to leave people with. That we don't want to say what might have been. We want to say, you know what, I created this opportunity for myself because it meant something to me and the impact I knew it would have on the world, and that's why I'm doing it.
That's great. I love that. That's a really, really, that could be for anything for sure. So you have this new book coming out called Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness, and I'd love for you to tell us a bit about that book and what does it aim to do?
Thank you so much. This has been the thing that I've been the most passionate about lately. I can't stop talking about it. I know I referenced the word book probably 7 times during our talk over the last hour or so. It's Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness, the complete guide to building your body on a plant-based diet. And that subtitle is basically what it is. It's broken down into all these different categories of mass building, of toning, fat burning, maintenance program. There's 50 meal programs in there. And it's deciding what you want to do with health and fitness and having all these tools and programs readily available for you. So we're talking about different training programs and nutrition programs and the types of foods to eat and when to incorporate them and meal frequency. And it's more than that, though. It's 340 pages, and obviously you can tell from talking to me, I have a big personal development, motivational underlying tone to everything that I do. And I'll just give you some of the chapter names, because I think they're really important. There's one, of course, where do you get your protein, an entire chapter about that, how to create a successful nutrition program, how to create a successful training program, choosing the exercises that yield the best results, turning your bodybuilding success into a form of activism and outreach, turning your passion into a career. These are important things, I think, and we even have in detailed math building, fat burning, pre-contest maintenance, raw food, and soy and gluten-free nutrition programs, and a bunch of other stuff, you know, how to market yourself to get sponsored, supplementation, list of equipment, products, services that are vegan, all these different resources. And the best part is it came out 2 months ago, April 7th, and I'm already on my fourth printing, and it's been absolutely incredible. Wow. The feedback has been amazing. It's been changing lives all over the world. And, I mean, I can't even begin to describe the feedback that I've been getting the last 2 months. It's just been inspiring.
I read some of it. It was just went on and on and on. Everybody just couldn't say enough good things about it. So I'm looking forward to getting that book. So it sounds to me like, you know, it's not necessarily like bodybuilding to me has been expanded today. It's not just about lifting weights and getting these great big muscles. It's building a body. And
exactly. That is the best way to describe it. And that's just the way you worded that is exactly what I've told people. It's not just about, you know, being a competitive bodybuilder, but it's about building your body and doing that on a plant-based diet. And actually, I had to rewrite a ton of it. It's this 340 pages, but I wrote over 700 pages total with all the rewrites and edits and making sure I tied everything in to make it applicable to everybody, men, women. There's even a 11-year-old kid who I signed a book for, and he's super excited about it. I mean, people in their 70s, because it's just an inspirational tool of how to have the best health, fitness, wellness, and do it all on a plant-based diet and have a ton of fun along the way. And that's exactly why I wrote it and why it took so long, a year and a half with all the edits, to make it fit any type of audience, regardless
of
your sports
interest. Totally going to be on my list of things to do, get one of those books. So I hope you have enough of them on stock still.
Well, thank you so much, and I think you'll really, really enjoy it.
I'm sure I will. So for everybody who's listening, if you want to keep in contact with Robert Cheek, and his name is spelled C-H-E-E-K-E, his last name, you can go to his Facebook fan page, and you can become one of his fans, and you can go to his site, which is www.veganbodybuilding.com. And it's just the way it sounds, veganbodybuilding.com. So I really thank you, Robert, for being here today and sharing such great tips and wonderful information. And Randy, the co-founder of the Health Tribe Forum, has something he'd like to say to you.
Oh, thank you.
Randy.
Hi, Robert. This has
Hey,
been
Randy.
Tremendously inspiring. I thank you very, very much. As Diane had said, we've been doing a real food for life for some time now, and it gives a lot of recipes and information and tips on nutrition and health in general. But the Health Tribe Forum is a new idea to us, and I was just thinking about it in relationship to you and some of the speakers. And just the word Health Tribe, by definition, it means like people participating as a group of people. And we wanted to have a forum for people to sort of come together in that context. So everyone who joins our newsletter or whatever, they're automatically members. And by definition, they've shown some interest in changing their life for the better to be healthier. But I thought, wouldn't it be great if we had different levels of membership? So a second level of membership would be someone who's actually done something that they could declare, yes, I did this in my life, and my life changed. It's for the better. Like, I quit smoking, or I went vegan, or whatever it is, and they could actually declare that. And there would be higher levels of membership where people had helped somebody else make a change in their life. But the very highest level of membership would be people who have helped hundreds and thousands of people, and you would easily come into that category. And so we wanted to offer you an honorary membership in that. And normally people have to declare themselves, but you're so good, we're going to declare you. And we haven't come up with the names yet. We like to, we're just playing around with names. Like, you might be an elder or a chief or what you wanted, actually. But
whatever you call me, I'm honored, and thank you so much.
Anyway, like, you deserve whatever the highest is. You're the topmost of that anyway, because the numbers of people you're helping. So that's great.
And what,
well, thank you so much, Randy.
And what we would like to, what we're going to do with it's everybody who's been on this forum are all in that category, and that means that you could once a month submit an article or tips for us to post on our site, and then with a link back to your site. So does that sound interesting to you?
Yeah, great, absolutely.
Okay, great. Okay, well, thank you again, everyone, for being here, and Robert. And as I said, this is part of the Health Tribe Forum. And if you have not joined and you've got come here through a phone number or something, and you want to keep in touch with everything, keep up to date, then go to the healthtribeforum.com. It's healthtribeforum.com. And you can join, and then you'll get to be involved with the whole group of five experts being interviewed, which is being recorded. And at the end of the forum, you will be able to purchase the whole series. But this call will be available for free for 24 hours after tonight. And Mimi Kirk's interview from Tuesday evening is still available till tomorrow morning. Isn't that right, Randy?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so you can still listen to that one as well. So next week we have Steve Irwuner. He's the author of Secret Teachings of Plants, and he's going to teach us how to talk to plants. And we have Victoria Botenko, mother of the raw food family, queen of the raw. She's on next week too. And also, just to let you know, my ebook, Eating Green, Clean, and Lean, will be available at the end of this forum. And it is a part of a series that's level one to, as an introduction to eating real food and whole food. And you'll be able to learn how to mix recipes, prepare a balanced meal. And by joining the forum, you'll get all the information on how to purchase that. So thank you again, Robert, and everyone. And we'll be back here next Tuesday at the same time, June 22nd. Okay.
Thank you so much, Dan, and thank you, everyone, for listening. Really
okay.
Appreciate it.
Okay, great. Bye for now.
Have a great night.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you so much.